This is Live and Local, your connection to local music, and the connection we're going to make today is to a concert tomorrow night by a group called Opus 24, which is a choral ensemble in Decatur, and their director Milton Scott is with us. Also, he's brought along a couple of guests, Jackson and Almeda Berkey, whom we will hear from and about in just a few minutes after a little music by Frédéric Chopin. Music by Chopin here on FM 90.9, his Mazurka in F sharp minor, played here by Vladimir Horowitz on FM 90.9. And I played that for sort of a circuitous reason, which we will get to a little bit later, having sort of a teaser for some music by Jackson Berkey we're going to hear later. Jackson Berkey and Almeda Berkey are among the guests for a concert by Opus 24, sponsored by the Decatur Choral Society. It's tomorrow night at 7:30 at St. Patrick Catholic Church on East El Dorado Street in Decatur. And their director, Milton Scott, is with us as well here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thanks to all of you for coming in today.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Milton Scott, tell us about, first of all, the Decatur Choral Society and Opus 24, and what's the difference or what's the relationship?
Well, the Decatur Choral Society is sort of the umbrella organization. We hope eventually to have some youth choirs involved with our organization. Opus 24 is just a group that was started in 1991 by 11 singers who wanted to just get together and sing again, teachers and church choir directors. And it has grown to a community chorus of, at this point, 42 singers, and a very popular group in the area. We are a group that sings what we would consider serious choral music, and our first concert was in February of 1992, and we've been singing two or three concerts a year ever since.
So the Decatur Choral Society is essentially as old as Opus 24?
Actually, it's a little bit younger. We've sort of functioned on our own as a small child for a couple of years, and then we got to put together a board and bylaws and all of that kind of thing, and it's very functional.
So the child in this case birthed its parent.
I guess that could be, yes, one way to phrase that.
Not the right. Usual way of thinking.
I think it was a child crying for help.
Yeah. Well, you said that the group is people wanting to sing again.
Yes. Matter of fact, I have a number of former students singing in it. I taught in the Decatur schools for 39 years. So there are people that are in the chorus that sang in their college programs and sometimes just in high school programs that wanted to get back and sing again more than they were just. Some of them were just singing in church choirs, which is great, and some of them were not singing at all. So this gives them an opportunity to do that, and they really enjoy it.
Was there anything in particular that gave you the bug to start this thing?
Just a phone call. I just said, hey, there's a group of us that would like to sing again, and it started with 11. We gave our first concert with 17 singers. That director left after about 2 months to take another job, so I became the second director, and I wanted at least 24 singers, thus the number 24. And we increased it and kept auditioning and kept wanting to do bigger and better things, and So that's how it's grown.
So when are you going to change the name to Opus 47 or
never,
some such?
Never. But people do, when I am at a convention or something, they say, oh, how's that group of yours? Opus 38 or 41 or what is it? And that's it's 24. But we have 24 is the name and our numbers vary.
Well, you could do like that famous John Cage piece that was supposedly called 4 minutes and however many seconds, which apparently was technically, if that was the title that day, because as I understand, the piece can be any number of any amount of length, and then it can also be, that would be the title. It doesn't have to be that title. So
well,
you
we thought
have
about
that fluidity.
Pattering it
after,
pattering the name after the stock market, you know, but it could go anywhere
well,
from Opus Zero to Opus,
So. Yeah, Opus, and you'd have to have minus numbers.
That's right.
They don't have Opus minus numbers unless you're PDQ Bach.
Right, right.
In which case, I believe he probably had any number any number of those. Yes. You said that the Opus 24 does what you would consider serious choral music. What do you mean by that?
Well, when I say serious choral music, music that's written for, let's say, a college level, folk music, newly composed works, pieces that you would find in a choral concert on lots of different campuses, good, strong high school programs, as opposed to, we don't do a lot of show tunes and pop things, and although we have in the past, we have done some things like that. We just feel that we want to keep the music going. We have a wonderful choral program at Millikan, and we don't certainly compete with them, but we sort of feed off each other. We sing with the Millikan Decatur Symphony every other year, and which we just did a few weeks ago. So that's what they've chosen to spend their time on as singers.
So you say they. Is the programming sort of a joint programming effort, or do you do most of it?
No, I choose all the repertoire, and they stick with me on it. Once in a while, they let me know. They'll say, what were you thinking there? And I'll say, just work with me here, you know. So.
And they probably come around.
And they do, yeah.
I'm thinking of any of a number of times in my own church choir where one person in particular who shall remain nameless in case he happens to be listening to the show or his friends may, who will, you know, make some comment about some piece that I've chosen, and I always just look at him and say, just wait for a couple of weeks and you'll be fine. So I think that choral singers especially are remarkably adaptable.
Well, and this is a very friendly group. I've never had any problems with their, you know, they're not walking out on me. And in fact, they really thank me generally after a concert, saying thanks for sort of pushing the envelope a little bit. And it's helped me grow as well.
Well, that's the other thing about choral singers. They can be very responsive personally. I was just in a conversation with a friend the other day about how when you stand in front of an orchestra, you often don't know what those instrumentalists are thinking. And if you had to judge based from looking at their faces, you might think there's a certain amount of hostility. Whereas if you're in front of choral singers, you're going to see their emotions, and more often than not, they're going to be a very positive response, which is one of the gratifying things about working with choirs. How do you think you got the nod to be the second director? Any idea why they asked you?
I think just because of my choral work, I was teaching at Eisenhower High School at that point, and I was
choral teaching, I guess.
Yes, right. I was choral director there, and also at First Lutheran Church. And so, of the 11 of us, there were I think probably 5 or 6 degreed musicians. The rest were good singers and whatever. But I think I was just logical because I was the only one who was really still in the practice of choral directing, and so.
So you were already in the group.
I was actually. I was the. I was one of 2 basses. So I had to, after I got asked to be the conductor, I had to quickly find another bass or two, which I did. I think we ended up with 4 for that particular first concert. Now we have, like I said, there are 42 singers, and we have a very good bass section of 11 basses and baritones.
I would have guessed you a tenor from your speaking voice somehow.
I was for many, many years.
Well, there you go.
But, yes, we'll just leave it at that. The Midwest allergies have taken their toll.
We're talking with Milton Scott, who is director of Opus 24. Decatur Choral Ensemble that's giving its spring concert tomorrow night at 7:30, St. Patrick Catholic Church in Decatur. And they have a couple of special guests whom we will meet very shortly, Jackson and Almeida Berkey. Jackson, I'm just going to read from the press release here. A well-known nationally as a pianist and recording artist, featured keyboardist on several Mannheim Steamroller recordings, and Almeida, a conductor, lyric soprano, and lyricist. Those go together nicely, and they've collaborated on some choral and solo works, and you'll hear examples of Jackson Berkey's composition and arrangement and Almeida Berkey's conducting on this program, in addition to many pieces conducted by Milt Scott. Here is a sample of Opus 24's performance. Milt, why don't you give us an introduction to this piece we're going to hear?
Well, I think this is from a CD, and it's a setting of Psalm 150 for choir, brass, and percussion. And it's written by Lloyd Larson, who was a former student of mine my very first year of teaching.
No kidding.
In 1960-something. So we did this at St. James Catholic Church, recorded it there. And it's very festive, and it's also based on a hymn tune called Praise to the Lord.
Opus 24, conducted by Milt Scott, on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Setting of Psalm 150 by Lloyd Larson, performed by Opus 24, conducted by Milton Scott, featuring pianist Nancy Evans and the Millikan University Brass Quintet and percussionists, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we're talking with Milton Scott, who is the director of Opus 24. They're giving a concert tomorrow night at 7:30, St. Patrick Catholic Church in Decatur. And they have a couple of guests on their program, Jackson and Almeida Berkey. And Milt Scott, when he emailed me to say that they were going to be on, introduced Jackson in particular as having been involved in Mannheim Steamroller recordings. And both of them. And I had to admit that, in my own mind anyway, that Mannheim Steamroller was one of those many names of which I have heard, but it occurred to me that I'm not exactly sure I know what Mannheim Steamroller does. So I had to do a lookup. And and I've sort of, one of the fun things about this show has been discovering both new artists for myself and discovering, in quite a number of cases, artists of whom I had heard, but I hadn't had any personal contact with myself, but, you know, lots of people that I know have, and many, many, many millions that I don't know have. So my first question before we actually introduce officially Jackson and Almeida Berkey is for Milt Scott. How did you get to know these folks, and how did they end up on your program?
I've asked myself that several times.
Many, many times.
It was 12 years ago when I was doing South Dakota Shadows, a piece that we're performing, and I had a question regarding a Native American language translation within the piece. So I found their phone number, and I called them, and I talked with Jackson. And there was this huge pause. I remember it. And he says, "When is your concert?"
So this was his piece.
Yeah. And I said, "Well, it's such and such date." He said, "Well, we could come out and work with your group." And we talked about it and negotiated it, and they both came and worked with our choir 12 years ago, and that's the start of it. And I had listened to Mannheim Roller Mannheim Roller. That would be Steamroller.
Yeah.
Before that. And so I knew the names, but like you, not really knew anything about them. So now I do, and they're back again.
So this is their second time?
Yes.
Over 12 years. Well, I'm sure that the choir is probably delighted to have the opportunity to work with both of them. So welcome, Jackson and Almeda Berkey, to Live and Local.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's nice to have guests becoming live and local in your case. Where do you actually live?
It's just nice to be live. Oh, that's alive, isn't it?
Yes.
Omaha, Nebraska, for the better part of the year. Second part of the year, we're on the road doing concerts. And third part of the year, we're out on the Olympic Peninsula.
So let's assume that I am not quite the only ignoramus when it comes to Mannheim Steamroller out there. Let those others like myself know, who is Mannheim Steamroller?
It's really the outgrowth of a studio group of players that was started about 34 years ago when I recorded a series of pieces called Fresh Air that Chip Davis wrote for me when we were both on tour with the Norman Luboff Choir.
And this is as a pianist?
Yes. I was Norman's touring pianist for 10 or 12 years, and Almeda was one of the singers with his choir for quite a few tours. After one of the tours, Chip and I went together back to Ohio, where he lived, and put together the first Fresh Air album, and eventually went into the studio and recorded it. And this actually was before the name Mannheim Steamroller was even in our thoughts. We had to come up with a name for the group whenever we were getting some radio airplay, and they introduced us as Fresh Air, because there was actually no artist name on the first disc that we released. So we kind of banged our heads together and came up with a name that kind of suggested a classical connection, because we've always used acoustic strings and harpsichord, and because of Chip's experience with bassoon and wind instruments, acoustic wind instruments on a lot of our recordings. And he's also the drummer on all of our recordings. And I've handled keyboards for the last 35 years. In any case, we came up with Mannheim Steamroller. My first suggestion was a music term that I learned at the university, Michigan State University. They have to be very clear about those.
Mm-hmm.
The term was Mannheim Rocket. And that was a term specifically that applied to some of the classical composers in Mozart's time. And we wanted something with a little more contemporary sound, so we chose Steamroller. And that name has kind of been with us ever since.
And a fair number of Christmas records, too.
Yeah, many, many. That kind of is where we made our name to the American public. That came after, I think, Fresh Air 1, 2, and 3. I'm not sure exactly of the chronology, but we started Christmas albums after we had done a couple of the Fresh Air albums.
And are you still recording as Mannheim Steamroller?
Yes, we've actually continued to record as Mannheim Steamroller for all of these years, although the acoustic players, such as myself, have kind of been sidelined by a lot of the synthetic textures and instruments that and the control of those in the studio. But in each recording that we've released, we've pretty much always had at least one acoustic track, or more, depending on the needs that Chip sees in the recording.
And are these all still his compositions, or
yes,
some of your compositions?
Yeah. My work is done on the remaining 9 or 10 months of the year when we're not touring, and I'm sometimes writing while we're touring, but usually not.
Well, let's talk about your work, and then we'll talk about Almeda's work, just because you've got the microphone first. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, talking with Jackson and Almeda Berkey and Milton Scott in advance of concert from the Decatur Choral Society. Tomorrow, the group is called Opus 24, and it's going to be in Decatur, logically enough. So during those other 9 months of the year, what are you doing? Quite a bit, it sounds like.
Composing a lot. I write a lot of music on commission. I would say probably 80% of my catalog has been written on commission. And it's gentlemen like Milt who really provide the ongoing impetus, because to me, music is a live performance art form as opposed to one that exists on paper, because the paper is so limited in what it can represent in many ways. And Milt he mentioned that we've been there twice to work with his choir, but he also has been an ongoing champion of my music, performing it in between our last visit and this visit. I know of some pieces that he's done. And most of the time, back to what I'm doing during the 9 months, both Almeda and I maintain teaching studios at our residence in Omaha. She teaches voice and conducting, and I teach piano mostly to adults, but occasionally a young, gifted student comes along.
Composition,
yeah, I teach that occasionally too. I find it very difficult to teach that because it's so personal, and I really don't like to, if someone has written a piece of music, you can't really tell them it's wrong. You can only suggest that perhaps they've abused the language that they started with, and they've got too many things going on that's confusing to a listener. Anyway, I'm writing most all the time.
Yeah, I've always wondered about the teaching of composition, how one really goes about that, because people, I mean, especially today, more than, centuries ago, everybody has their own voice, it seems like, and particularly in a university setting where they seem to encourage your own voice. How do you teach somebody to use their voice if it's in a completely different language than that in which you would speak musically?
Well, I think the familiarity with how music is put together is a necessity. As far as the voice is concerned, my personal opinion is the only way a composer's voice can be established is by ongoing writing, and a lot of it. And I feel that what establishes a recognizable quality in a composer's music is what that composer rejects in the course of writing eventually makes the music arrive at a certain combination of elements that pretty much become recognizable over a period of time. So you can't really establish, I don't think, an actual voice in one piece, because if you write a second piece that's really completely different, then the two pieces aren't linked by similar choices.
There was a concert here at the University of Illinois within the last couple or 3 years of music by John Corigliano, and it was every piece was for a very different solo instrument or ensemble.
Right.
And every piece sounded remarkably different. And yet, well, I think most of the time you could guess that it was the same composer. Of course, you couldn't really guess because you were at the concert and you knew they were all by the same composer. But I just thought it was astounding that the same person had so many ways of speaking so profoundly
each time. I think that would be the case with any composer who has a certain amount of output. I think you would, if you listen to, for instance, if I put together a concert of my music and you listen, well, the concert we're doing with Opus 24, there's a huge difference between all of the pieces, and they each have a specific purpose. But when you get to the intricacies of the actual writing, there are very conscious decisions that are made. I often use as an example the difference between Mozart and Beethoven when writing in the bottom register of the piano. Mozart never would put a low third in a chord, or very, very seldom, where Beethoven used it all the time. You can almost use that choice of having that thickness in the lower texture in the piano music as a way of saying this is Beethoven or this is Mozart. Prokofiev also is instantly recognizable, even though all of his pieces are very different and written for different purposes. But it's the it's not just the notes, but it's the voicings and the way all of those decisions are made that represent that personal choice by a composer that results in a recognizable sound.
And it really takes somebody schooled in composition, or at least theory, to actually look at the music and say, ah, this is why Beethoven sounds like Beethoven, or Sibelius sounds like Sibelius, whereas somebody not schooled is just going to hear the sound and just wonder, why is it that sound?
But I don't know why. Yeah.
Let's hear a sample of your composition, brought along. We're having a sneak peek,
an adventure
at something here.
I'm in the process of writing a set of 24 nocturnes following the key structure in the circle of fifths, and in starting this project, established a work folder on my computer so that I had everything essentially set up to begin writing, so that because I write every day and often very early in the morning, and I sometimes just sit down and noodle a bit. And if I noodled something that sounded like it might work for one of the nocturnes, I'd drop it into the folder, maybe use it later, maybe not. Kind of like Schubert keeping a notebook of ideas, except it's kept in a different way. Anyway, this is the nocturne in G minor, and it's number 22 of this set, and it kind of includes elements of Prokofiev, definite elements of Debussy, and if you're a pianist, you'd also recognize some of the technical things that Robert Schumann does in Faschingsschwank aus Wien.
Carnival Jest from Vienna.
Exactly.
That name. The name is so much more fun to say in German.
Exactly.
Though.
And somewhat challenging.
Faschingsschwank. Well, if anybody was listening at the beginning of the show when I introduced this all with music by Chopin, this was kind of my oblique reference here. I was thinking nocturne, thinking Chopin was probably the first person that wrote nocturnes. And so now we're going to hear a nocturne in, did you say G flat?
This is in G minor.
G minor.
Number 22. And it kind of follows the standard nocturne form of an A section and a B section. Usually there is a return to the A in the nocturne form, so the middle section is episodic in nature. In this case, the episode occurs, but it doesn't ever return to the first material.
So music by Jackson Berkey, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The nocturne composed and performed by Jackson Berkey here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Jackson Berkey, one of three guests this morning on the show, along with Almeda Berkey, from whom we will hear in just a moment. They are both going to be appearing with Opus 24 tomorrow night on their spring concert, presented by the Decatur Choral Society. Milton Scott is their director. He's with us on the show as well. That concert tomorrow night at St. Patrick Catholic Church on East El Dorado Street in Decatur. And we have a recording coming up also of music by Jackson Berkey, performed by a group called Soli Deo Gloria Cantorum, which is directed by his wife Almeda, who is also a singer, teacher, and lyricist. What is the lyricist part?
That's me writing lyrics for Jackson's full-length works, cantatas, sometimes a song or two. And it was something that I hadn't done before, and somehow our connection was just right for that. So he enjoys those words that I give him, and I certainly enjoy hearing them set to music.
Well, and there's a rather intimate connection between the two of you.
Yes.
That has to help, I would think. Or does that ever get in the way?
No, it has never gotten in the way. There's a great mutual respect and admiration and a tremendous amount of love, and we enjoy each other's works. He appreciates what I am able to do, and I deeply admire what he is able to do. So it's really a love joint there. It's nothing out of difficulty. Our touring with Mannheim Steamroller is effortless because he's the great pianist, and I get to fill in all the cracks, so with my ability.
And how do you fit into the Mannheim Steamroller picture?
Oh, I play keyboards as well, harpsichord, synthesizer. I synthesize a lot of instruments maybe that might not be with us on stage. I also play piano, but a lot of MIDI stations and some percussion, toys.
Toys. I read that reference in some of the recordings of Mannheim Steamroller. So more toys in the later ones, or something like that. The farther they go, the farther you go into these recordings, the more toys.
We have a few toys tomorrow night too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such as
toys.
Oh, some interesting little blue shakers, and
for the singers.
The percussionist.
Cowbell.
Cowbell, yes.
Bass, marimba, vibes.
I don't think those are called toys.
Well, it depends on the player.
some great players working with us tomorrow night.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Support for our program today is provided by Tour Group Pro, WYLL's travel providers for more than 20 years. Friends of WYLL will travel to New England, then cruise to Nova Scotia beginning September 23rd with special excursions for friends of WYLL planned along the way. More information is available by contacting Donda Beard at WYLL or at will.illinois.edu. Almeida, you conduct this group called Sole Deo Gloria Cantorum. Tell us about that.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm supposed to be good at that sort of thing.
You did that very well. It's a professional group. We started that, I believe, in 1989. It was really started for the centennial of the 10th largest cathedral in the United States, which happens to be in Omaha. And they wanted a piece written. They wanted a great choral group to perform that piece and bless the celebration. And that was the beginning of it. Jackson wrote a piece called Arma Lucis, which is the first recording of Sole Deo Gloria Cantorum. And that was using the text that was inscribed in the ceiling up around the whole perimeter of the oval shape. And it was a marvelous piece. So that was the beginning of the group, and it has stayed together ever since. We no longer do subscription series concerts, which are become kind of a difficulty in different spots in the country. But we tour. We do a lot of concerts for other groups and hosted by performing organizations or arts organizations.
And for those who don't speak Latin, what does the name mean?
Basically, all to the glory of God, or alone to the glory of God. Our publishing and recording arms are SDG Press and SDG Records, and actually it's Sole Deo Gloria, but we use just the letters.
And then the cantorum part?
Representing singers.
So the phrase itself doesn't necessarily...
Right.
It's the first phrase, and the singers sort of added on at the end.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's here's a connection between you and Milt Scott. You both started, Milt didn't quite start Opus 24, but might as well have.
Right.
Apparently with the short-lived nature of the first director. and you were involved from the beginning. I want you, Milt, in a little bit to talk about the program you're going to do tomorrow night, but let's hear an example of your work, Almeida, with Soli Deo Gloria. I cannot do this.
You know, you can just say the Cantorum.
Yeah, your group. We'll just go with SDG Singers. How's that?
Yes.
Requiem for a Pioneer Woman.
Right, and that's the final movement of South Dakota Shadows, and the entire work, the multi-movement work, was written for the centennial of the statehood of South Dakota. And I don't know how many of your listeners may have visited the state, but it's an incredibly gorgeous state. There's so much to see, and there's stark contrasts. There's also an element of Scandinavian writing and singing and in the pieces, there are many colors displayed from just like the Badlands area. They're just remarkable poetry from that state. This poem is by Margaret Delaney, and it's a final tribute to a pioneer woman who tended prairie home fires and whose soul has found rest at last.
So is this your...
This is my conducting of the piece, the final movement from South Dakota Shadows called Requiem.
But these are not your lyrics.
These are not my lyrics. And it's a composition by Jackson.
Heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Requiem for a Pioneer Woman, music by Jackson Berkey, based on a poem by Margaret Delaney, and that's from a larger work of pieces called South Dakota Shadows, performed here by Soli Deo Gloria Cantorum. I got it right this time. Conducted by Almeida Berkey. Jackson and Almeida, both guests here on Live and Local today, and they are both guests of Opus 24, the choral group in Decatur, which is giving its spring concert tomorrow night at 7:30. Milton Scott, their director, and Milt is here as well. Why don't you tell us about the program you're going to sing? We've talked about all kinds of other things, and so you've organized it in three sets, it looks like.
I have. The three sets are, the first set is basically all American music. There are five pieces. There's Copeland and Stephen Paulus and Billings. And then the set two and three are really belong then to the Berkeys, and Almeida will be conducting, and Jackson will be playing. And it's a very good representation, I think, of the literature that we do. And we're just very excited. We always have a marvelous audience and a good following, and a program like this seems to really satisfy the audience, especially when you put in some things like Hymn for America, that's the Stephen Paulus, and favorites like Hark, I Hear the Harps Eternal, arranged Alice Parker. So it's a very good, solid program.
The St. Patrick Catholic Church, I've certainly never been there since I'm in Urbana, and I haven't made it to that location. Is that a really nice acoustic in there for
yes,
people
Yes, it's very live. It's a very tall, very typical Catholic cathedral with the transept with the big dome and that kind of thing. So the acoustics are rather live, and it changes a little bit with the big audience and whatever, but there's still a lot of resonance, and it's a wonderful place to sing because we get to sing up on the front marble steps, and it's a very good place to host music, especially where you want a lot of sound.
So you're going to have an ensemble of some kind accompanying?
Right. We have one of these is with four guitars. Another is with a string quartet. Actually, it's going to be almost a quintet with the bass. And then we have auxiliary percussion as well. And they all play a variety of different pieces, and plus the grand piano itself.
And Jackson, you'll be playing the piano on that program?
Yes, I'll be. We have the piano set up in a really interesting way. I have the keyboard parallel with the front of the choir, and so that I'm sitting facing Almeida, and I'll be flanked by bass drum and percussion, snare drum, marimba, and vibes for a piece that I wrote called Benjamin Franklin's 13. So actually the first time as a composer I've ever set a list, the 13 virtues that that Franklin carried with him. I made a piece out of that. It's quite an interesting piece. I'm playing a couple of my piano solos as well. Milt asked me to do that. So I'm playing a Rachmaninoff, a piece that I wrote. Then let me start again. I'm playing my 12th nocturne in G-sharp minor, which is called Homage to Sergei Rachmaninoff. And it's initially starts out like the Rachmaninoff prelude in G-sharp minor, but after about a bar, it leaves that completely and progresses into the nocturne form. And then we're doing quite an interesting piece that I set for the Cantorums tour. They did a spring tour a couple of years back, and I did a setting of Debussy's Reverie for the Cantorum to sing. And essentially, I keep the piano score identical to Debussy's original version, and then I orchestrated it with voices. And it works very, very beautifully in the cathedral. We're also doing four movements from South Dakota Shadows, including the Requiem that we heard tonight, and we have, as Milt mentioned, a string quintet playing in that. And then we're doing a couple of pieces by from the Philip Whitehawk collection. Phil is a Native American that I worked with back in the 70s, recording some albums with him, LPs with him. We're doing Hold On, a piece that Phil wrote kind of celebrating life, as most of his pieces do. And a very interesting piece called Cibola, and that's the work that uses we'll use guitars and bass and piano in that. So I'll be hammering away at most of the the concert.
And that was an interesting piece for this part of the country since we
Cibola.
Cibola, yes, since we were here to do the premiere of it with five men's glee clubs here at your wonderful hall.
At the Krannert
Center of U of I.
Exactly.
And had 15 guitarists with that huge group of men singing. It's a wonderful piece.
So you couldn't scrape up 15 guitarists for this concert, huh?
They would have buried the singers, perhaps.
that would make for a nice sound in the resonant acoustics. I suggest that to the 17 guitarists from Illinois State that we had in the show some weeks ago. That would be much better acoustic for them than our conference room here at WILL. Well, I really appreciate all three of your coming on the show today.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure.
Wish you the best of luck in the concert. It's Opus 24's spring concert tomorrow night at 7:30, St. Patrick Catholic Church on East Eldorado. I keep wanting to say East Colorado. East Eldorado Street in Decatur. Presented by the Decatur Choral Society. Milton Scott, their director, and one of my guests today, Jackson and Almeida Berkey, guest composer and pianist and guest conductor, respectively, on that concert. And so let's go out here with another performance by Opus 24 of music by David Childs called The Moon is Distant from the Sea.
Distant from the sea, the stars are so.
Opus 24, conducted by Milton Scott, performing music by David Childs called The Moon is Distant from the Sea. And excuse me, for information, you can get tickets through the Decatur Area Arts Council or any number of churches. Try this number, 422-1609, to hear Opus 24 tomorrow night at 7:30 in Decatur. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. You're listening to WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana. It's 63 degrees at a minute past 1:00.